Right, we're beginning now on the top of Kuf Bet Amud Aleph. We're continuing the sugya that we left off with yesterday. The Rava made the statement that stam etzim la'asaka hinumdim, that wood or trees and branches in general are used la'asaka. We saw the machlokas between Rashi and Tosfot had explained that answer in the context of the Gemara statement before about etzim demashchan. Etzim demashchan, according to Rashi, is the wood or it was used for torches. Whereas for Tosfos' explanation that etzim mashkan were items that were used for heating, so according to Rashi, that they were used for etzim de mashkan were used for lighting torches. The Gemara's conclusion and Rava's conclusion there was tam etzim lasaka hinumdim, and that generally wood is used for fire and not for light, and therefore there is no kedushat shvi'it that comes upon these items. These items never have or are never associated with kedushat shvi'it. And therefore, there is no kedushat shvi'it, even when it comes to these etzim demashchan. Tosfos, on the other hand, learned that the etzim demashchan was about heat. If it's about heat, then the biuran is shaveh, meaning that the time that they're consumed, their utility is being used for heat. And Tosfos answers that stam etzim hasaka hinum din hasaka means that in order to heat the oven, not that the heat is used directly from the wood, but rather that the wood is used to heat an oven, and then one cooks in the oven afterwards with that heat that came from the etzim. So that was the Gemara's conclusion we left off with yesterday, which is Amar Rava Stam Etzim La'Asaka Umdim. Amar Rav Kahana, Kahana says Etzim La'Asaka Tanahi. This concept of Etzim La'Asaka is a Machloket Tanaim. So now we're going to go with Rashi's interpretation, and we'll come back to Tosfot, who learns the Gemara differently. He actually quotes from Rashi in Masechet Sukkah, and as you know, Masechet Sukkah says that Rashi in Sukkah gives a different interpretation, which is obviously not like the interpretation he gives here, and that Tosfos is quoting from the Gemara in Sukkah. So over here, Rashi says, what does it mean that it's a Tanaihi, it's a Machloket Tanaim? That Ika the Mandamar, there's one who says, Stam Etzim La'Asaka Nitnu Velo Chayli Shvi'it Afilo Etzim Demashkan. That's a general principle with all wood, with all types of branches and trees, that they are in general used for this purpose, and therefore there is no questions asked, there is never Kedushat Shvi'it when it comes to Etzim. On the other hand, there's Inka Deman de Leple that doesn't hold to this position, and therefore Etzim Demashkan, if you find the situations where you find wood, trees or branches that are used where Hanatan and Biurama Shaver, then you would have Kedushat Shvi'it Bichal. What is that? That's the case of like Etzim Demashkan. Etzim Demashkan, which are wood that's used for a torch. There, the utility comes at the same time that the item is consumed, as the branch is consumed, because you get the light at the time that it's being burnt up, and therefore they would have Kedushat Shvi'it. So the machlokas is, what's the default status with regards to trees, wood, branches? Is the default status that there is no kedushat shvi'it, and there's no way to overcome that problem? Or is it that maybe that in general etzim are used la'hasaka, and therefore there will be no kedushat shvi'it? But if we find a situation and we come into contact with a person who's using them in a manner that has their consumption and utility be at the same time, then they would be able to acquire kedushat shvi'it. So that's Machlokes Tanaim. Detanya, what's this? Where do we see this? Ein Mosrim Perot Shvi'it Lo Demishra Velo Dekvusa. One cannot give over Perot Shvi'it to be used for a Mishra and a Kvusa. Mishra is for soaking Pishtan, that's for soaking flax with a wine of Shvi'it. And also, we do not allow you to Kvusa from the word Kvisa. We don't allow you to launder with the Perot Shvi'it. Rashi quotes here the reason for being that it's Tzchorat, Avi Tzchorat, that it's actually transacting in Perot Shvi'it. Although it seems that there should be a simpler explanation of just Hefsed Perot Shvi'it, that here you're using up Perot Shvi'it not for their designated purpose. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Notim Perot Shvi'it, L'tocha Mishra, L'tocha Kvusa. Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says you can may use fruits for these purposes, even though they're not what we would consider to be their general purpose, which is eating these and consuming these fruits. Rather, they can be used for the Mishra and the Kvusa. My time at the Rabbanan. What's the position? Where is the position of the Tanakam and the Rabbanan derived from? Amar Kra, Lechla, Velo de Mishra, Lechla, Velo de Kvusa. We look at the requirements of what you do with a Perot Shvi'it. Perot Shvi'it must be eaten. So when we say they must be eaten and not used to soak flax, and they must be eaten and not to used for laundering in them. Rabbi Yossi Amar Kra Lechem. The Pasuk says by Perot Shvi'it that you may use it Lechem for yourselves. Lechol Tzar Chachem, whatever uses you want. I mean that there is no restriction as to what you use the Perot Shvi'it for. Rabbana Nami Aktiv Lechem. Alright, well the Rabbanan have to deal with the fact that the word Lechem does appear in the Pasuk, so what are they going to do with that? It says Lechem Dumiyad L'Achla. You're right. Lechem says Lechol Tzar Chachem. You're right. It doesn't have to simply be eating. but it has to be eat. It has to be lachem, lachotarchem, whatever your needs are, whatever your uses of perishbiyit are permitted, as long as they conform to the use of achilah. What is it conform to the use of achilah? B'mishanato ubiro shavim. That means that it has to be something where the utility and the consumption of the item take place simultaneously. Yetzu, excluded from that is obviously mishra ukvusasha tanan achar biuran. They'll be excluded. This soaking of the flax or of laundering with these items, they were not qualified. The chotachem, that is similar to achilah, because they have their utility and consumption at different points in time. Because they are, hana comes at the time much later on, meaning that you soak the items there, and it first, you know, soaks for a while, gets worse, and ruins the perot right away. So the perot are useless after that point in time. So you've already done the bi'ur, but hana only comes after 2, 3, 4 days when the item has soaked properly, or the kvisa has cleaned out the clothing. So it takes a long period of time before the hana is, the utility comes to fruition, whereas on the other hand, the consumption happens right away because the fruits are ruined immediately. So therefore, they exclude mishra and kvusa. Rabbi Yossi nami aktiv lachla. Well, Rabbi Yossi also has the word lachla, which is a, according to Chachamim, restricting factor with regards to perot shvitz. What does he do with that? Amar lachla hu mibayle l'ketanya. I need that for the price. Ketanya lachla v'lo l'mlugma. That you can use perot shvitz to eat, but not for some sort of ointment or bandage to be placed over a wound. Well, why do you have to learn it? That's lachla, and not for using for an ointment or a bandage. Once you say it's to eat it and not to launder. I mean, why did you pick the exclusion to be items or an item like a bandage or ointment versus laundering and soaking? I already know from the word lachem that kvusa from laundering has been included. So how many became lachla? So what do I do with the word lachla? Lachla comes to teach me to eat and not to use it for an ointment or a bandage. So when it says, okay, that's very nice. But why did you choose from the word, you have a word lachem which is inclusionary, you have a word lachla which is exclusionary, so why did you pick to include mishran kvusa from lachem and to exclude melugma from lachla? So what's the logic behind that? So marbaniyat the kvusa shishave b'chol adam. I include kvusa laundering, which is equal, or everybody would use in the same manner. I'm excluding amlugma, which is not something that everybody would use. So Rashi over here defines what it means. She'enu shave b'chol adam. That's not equal to all people. Is that in itzricha l'cholim? You only need it for sick people. And that healthy people do not require a mlugma, as opposed to kvisa, which everybody requires. Now, the interpretation we'll see in a second of that Rashi gives for other items is that not that it's anybody with sick would probably need this item. Less clear definition of eno shave b'chol adam. Kiman az lahadatanya. So who does this go like? Who does this price go to? Lachla v'lo l'mlugma. You can use perot shvi to eat, but not to make into an ointment or bandages. Lachla v'lo l'ziluf. You use it, but not for sprinkling wine. Over here, so that you sprinkle wine over the houses, Rashi says. You can use it to eat, but not to make it into a concoction that causes one to throw up. Come on, who's this like? That's Rabbi Yossi. The Iker Rabbanan, you can have Mishra Kvusa. Because if it was the Rabbanan, the Achla also comes to exclude soaking and laundering with the perot shvi. The fact that they're not mentioned in this braisa seems to indicate that this is the position of Rabbi Yossi. In this case, Rashi says, why is the leaf yayin to sprinkle the wine over the house? Why is that not included? Why is that excluded from lochla? So we said Rabbi Yossi includes things that are shaveh b'chol adam, that are equal to every people, and he does not include things that are in a shaveh b'chol adam. So that's what Rashi says about the leaf yayin. Rashi says that the reason is because in tzirech siyuf adam mi'unagumu. It's for a person who is very particular and picky. That's the type of person that's going to use the ziluf. So there we can understand that in a shavet chol adam is that this is for a particular set of people that have particular characteristics, as opposed to cholim, which is a category of people which anybody could fall into. I mean, it just happens to be that a person is healthy now, so they don't need to have it. But any person could be in that category of cholim, as opposed to miudan and munag, which is a characteristic of a person that most people will never enter that category. There's a slight difference in the way Rashi explains inner shavet chol adam in these two cases. Gaminot, when it comes to shavet chol nefesh, when we discuss with regard to the heter ochel nefesh, when it comes to Yom Tov, there one of the requirements of Gemara makes is that it has to be a hana shevel ochel nefesh. That it has to be something that's equal, hana, that's equal for everybody. So depending on what you see as the definition here of enu shevel ochel adam in Rashi, that will maybe have some influence on what you call shevel ochel nefesh in Rashi. Now, according to Rashi, that he explained about, that there is a machloket tanaim when it comes to stam etim hazakah. This is the way Rashi explains the machloket. Now we have the Rabbanan, who hold that stam peiro tala, the default position of all fruits with regards to Shavit is they are Kadosh, B'Kedushat Shavit. And your Machshava, what you think about what you want to do with these Peirot, has no influence or impact on those Peirot Shavit. As soon as they grow on the tree, they are Kadosh, B'Kedushat Shavit. And when you pick them, you have no influence or ability to change that status based on what you're going to use the Peirot for. So therefore, when you come along to use them, like Mishra, like Vusa, you want to use them for soaking or for laundering, that's not going to impact the Peirot Shvi'it, and you're not permitted to use these Peirot Shvi'it. But when it comes to wood, like Eitzim, the default position is Stam Eitzim Lasaka. Lo, Chayla, Filo Eitzim, Dimashkan. It's not going to fall on any Eitzim. I mean, that the default position of wood or branches or trees is that there is no Kedushat Shvi'it on them. So it doesn't matter, again, what you think. That is the default position. So you have the default position of fruits, which is Kadosh, and you have the default position of Eitzim, which is not Kadosh. And how you pick them or what you do to them will have no influence on these items. Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, says no. He says that Stam Peirot are not L'Achila. That Stam Peirot are not always used for eating. That Peirot can be used or can be determined, their Kedushat Shvi'it, based on what you're going to use them for. So therefore, if you pick the fruits to use them for soaking or for laundering, then they will not attain Kedushat Shvi'it. On the other hand, if you have a machshava about them for eating, then they will have Kedushat Shvi'it, like any other food that you would assume they'd have Kedushat Shvi'it. So that would be similar to what we saw yesterday's daf of Avei Kanim and Gvanim. That depending on what you pick them for, if you pick them for achila, they would acquire Kedushat Shvi'it. But if you pick them for burning or for etzim to be burnt, then they do not acquire Kedushat Shvi'it. So now, the way Rashi explains it now is that Rabbi Yossi's position is basically when you pick them, that will determine what the Kedushah of the item is. And how does that be determined? That depends on what the usage is. If the usage is something that hanato b'yiroshaveh, something that the utility and the consumption take place at the same time, then that item will acquire Kedushat Shvi'it. So, for instance, peirot. If you decide to pick them for food, then their utility and consumption happens simultaneously, they'll have Kedushat Shvi'it. But if you pick them for the mishra l'kvusa, if you pick them for laundering or soaking, their hanatam and biram inan shaveh, their consumption utility do not take place at the same time, therefore they will not attain Kedushat Shvi'it. Same thing with the alei kfanim and the alei kanim. If you pick them to be used for achila, then they are hanatan viran shaveh, and they acquire Kedushat Shvi'it. If you pick them for fire, to use them as firewood, then it's not equal, and therefore they do not acquire Kedushat Shvi'it. So the Rashi says that, Rabbi Yossi, again, by a mashkan, etzim to mashkan also, depending on what you pick the wood for. If you pick up the wood to be a torch, or you pick up the wood to be something that where its utility and consumption is simultaneous, then it will acquire Kedushat Shvi'it. So Rabbi Yossi says all about the machshava, and the machshava, according to Rashi, determines whether it has Kedushat Shvi'it based on what you're going to use the item for. On the other hand, the Rabbanan believe that there are basically default categories of fruits, which are all fruits that have Kedushat Shvi'it, and the default categories of Eitzim, which is all Eitzim, are the Hasaka Nitu. That's the explanation of Rashi. Tosus brings down a Girsa from Rashi in Sukkah, and he explains the Machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Yosli slightly differently. And then he says that Perush, Kol Eitzim Shvi Shvi'it, Havi Plukto. All wood on Shvi'it is a Machlokas with them, that whether they have Kedushat Shvi'it or they don't have Kedushat Shvi'it. Why is that? The Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that he does not have the drasha of Hanato u'birosheveh, the inyan peirot shvi'it. When it comes to peirot shvi'it, he says there's no requirement that the peirot shvi'it be consumed or utilized in a manner where the consumption utility happens simultaneous. And therefore, you can see from Rabbi Yossi that Kedushat Shvi'it can be chal on even on items that do not have a utility consumption simultaneous. So too, for Kedushat Shvi'it to come upon or to be attained by wood, trees, branches, will be the same thing. Because according to Rabbi Yossi, the Kedushat Shvi'it is not determined by how you will use or utilize the item in the future. The everything is kadosh b'kedushat shvi'it. As long as it grows out of the ground, it seems like it's got kedushat shvi'it, and there's no determination or no factor of biran and hanatan shaveh. As opposed to Chachamim, believe that when it comes to perot having kedushat shvi'it, all perot have kedushat shvi'it because stam perot is la'achila, they are only la'achila, and hanatan ubiran shaveh. If you're going to utilize it for something that where it's hanato ubiro inan shaveh is not equal, then you cannot use them because the perot have kedushat shvi'it. As opposed to Eitzim are Stam La'asaka, where Hanotam Biram Einan Shaveh, and therefore their status is that of that they do not acquire Kedushat Shvi'it. So according to Tosafot, the Chachamim's position is that Stam Eitzim La'asaka, Stam Eitzim means that all wood is not Mekabel Kedushat Shvi'it, because in general it's Hanotam Biram Einan Shaveh, are not equal, the utility and consumption does not happen simultaneously, and therefore they never acquire or attain Kedushat Shvi'it. As opposed to Perot, which are Hanatan Ubiran Shaveh, and they do acquire Kedushat Shvi'it, and you can't utilize them for anything that does not have that, or does not meet the requirement of Hanatan Ubiran Shaveh. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says, no, everything has Kedushat Shvi'it. I have no requirement of Hanatan Ubiran Shaveh. I never have that principle that utility and consumption must happen simultaneously. If I don't have that requirement, that means I can use Perot for whatever I want, even if they're kadosh with kedushat shvi'it. But it also means that Eitzim are kadosh with kedushat shvi'it because I don't have this requirement that their utility and consumption happen simultaneously. So based on what Rabbi Rashi learned, Rabbi Yossi is the one who says that everything is determined by machshava, that you can be impact, your subjective influence on the items. That's what Rabbi Yossi holds, as opposed to Chachamim, which have objective categories. According to Tosus, right, the Chachamim also agree that there's objective categories of Stam Eitzim and Stam Perot. Because Rabbi Yossi has nothing. You don't impact at all because everything is kadosh b'kedushat shvi'it, because he eliminates any requirements or any gdarim to set what becomes kadosh b'kedushat shvi'it. Everything becomes kadosh b'kedushat shvi'it, as opposed to the Rabbanan who say that it's limited by this factor of hanatanu biran shaveh. Alright, that's the different explanations of Rashi and Tosfos here with regards to the Gemara. Now, the Gemara continues to explain the position of Rabbi Yehuda we saw in our Mishnah, where Rabbi Yehuda says that you pay the lesser of the yitzi'ah, or the Hotza'oto the Shevach. You pay the lesser of the expenditures or the Shevach that's created here. So Rashi in the Mishnah initially said the reason for that is that Rabbi Yehuda is Kones. He gives a Knas. He finds the individual who does such an item. We're going to see today on the beginning of the second Amud today, that Rashi actually says, and the Gemara says, that Rabbi Yehuda believes Shinoi is not Kone. So over here you have a Shinoi, and he's not Kone. If he's not Kone, then he's on the hook. If he's not Kone, everything accrues to the Baalim, the original Baalim. The only case where the loss doesn't accrue to him is because he can claim that the agency has been terminated. So we'll see that on the second half of the daf. So now, Yativ Rabbi Yosef, Achorei the Rabbi Ava. Rabbi was sitting behind Rabbi Ava, Kamei the Rabbi Huna, before they were sitting in front of Rabbi Huna, Yativ Rabbi Huna, Vekamah, Rabbi Huna was saying over, Halacha Rabbi Shua ben Karchov, Halacha Rabbi Yehuda. Halacha like Rabbi Shua ben Karchov, and Halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. Ajinu Rabbi Yosef Lapei. Yosef turned his face away in a disapproving manner. Amar. Said Bishlam Rabbi Yosef ben Karcha Yitzrich, that the fact that he told us Rav Huna that the Lachas are Rabbi Shimon Karcha, that we need Saka that Chamin. I would have thought Yachid Rabbim Lachas Rabbim. When it came to Psak Lacha there, Rabbi Shimon Karcha was arguing on the Stam the Rabbanon. So we think the Lachas like the Rabbanan because of the Rabbim. So he comes along to say Kamashulan Lachas Ki Yachid. The Lachas like Rabbi Shimon Karcha, despite the fact that he's a Yachid versus Rabbim. So Gemara says, Rabbi Shua ben Karcha Mahi. What is this Rabbi Shua ben Karcha that we're speaking about here? The time you have a brayser, Rabbi Shua ben Karcha Omer, Milve Bishtar, Eini Frein Mehen. If one has a loan outstanding to non-Jews, or really Ovdei Avodah Zarah, who are coming up into one of their holidays. So if you have an outstanding loan with them, that is under contract, meaning that there's evidence, a contractual evidence to the loan, and therefore you'll have an ability to collect from it afterwards. We do not collect within 3 days of their holidays because we're afraid if they pay off the loan, they'll be excited or happy about paying off the loan, and they will give praise or thanks to their Avodah Zarah, and you'll actually be the cause of that their being or giving more credence and thanks to their Avodah Zarah. Milveh peh, hadoeh, and if it's an oral loan, Nifreimehem yipnei shukumatil miyadam. If it's an oral loan, we say collect any time because the fact that he's willing to pay you now, you should seize the opportunity and collect the money, because another day from now, 2 days from now, you can just deny the whole thing, and you have no evidence to the fact that you had lent out the money, so better get the money when you can, rather than wait. So, Ela halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda lamali. On the other hand, why do we need this halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda? So I understood why we need the halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda ben Karcha. K'Rabbi Yehuda ben Karcha, who the Chachamim disagree with over there and say you cannot collect in any instance when it comes to whether it's an oral loan or a documented loan, you can't collect from them because they might go and give praise to their avodah zarah. Rabbi Yehuda ben Karcha, on the other hand, says no, it's the difference between shtar and milveh alpeh. Now, I understand why you need that halacha to tell us the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Kacha, not the Rabbanan. When it comes to Rabbi Yehuda, why do I need the halacha? Rabbi Yehuda of our mission, that's what we're discussing here. Why do we need that? Machloket, Vachakar Stamhi. We have a machloket in our mission between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, but yeah, we have a Stam Mishnah further on in Baba Mitzia. The machloket, Vachakar Stam, we have a principle. When you have a Mishnah that has a machloket in it, and afterwards you have a Stam Mishnah that goes like one of the two principles in the Mishnah that has the machloket, then Allah is kistam, like the Mishnah that goes that has so tame, like one of those individuals. So machloket be Baba Kama. The machloket is here in Baba Kama, which is our Mishnah over here. It's Balo Adom Utzva Shachor. He was supposed to die red and he ended up dying in black. Shachor black, Utzva Adom. On the other hand, he died it red instead of black. Rabbi Meir Omer, no tem lo demei tomorrow. Rabbi Meir says you're koneh because there's a shinoi here. And according to Rashi, like he's a mazik. Be a dying because he was nitkaven lishnot, and therefore he's koneh with the shinoi of the colors. If there's a koneh with shinoi colors, then basically he owes him wool, the raw wool at the raw state, and then anything he did afterwards basically accrues to the craftsman himself because it's all his own wool at that point. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says imashivach ketel yitziyah. If the improved quality and improvement in the beged exceeds that of the expenditures, then notin lo etziyah, he gives the lesser amount, meaning the expenditures. If the expenditures exceed the shevach, exceed the value, the additional value here, notin lo etziyah, he gives him the additional value. V'satam b'bamitziyah, and we have a stam mishnah in b'bamitziyah. The tzan kolam neshaneh yadoat achdono. Anybody who changes, he's got the lower end. He gets the low end of the stick. That's exactly what our Mishnah says over here. Rabbi Yehuda believes that whoever changes basically is on the low end. He gets the lesser of the expenditures or the improved value. Whereas Rabbi Meir says no. The craftsman gets to keep it either way, better or worse. And anybody who changes or tries to go back on an agreement, then he has the bottom hand, which is not exactly, it's not relevant to our case here. Ravuna Yisrech. So Rav Yosef, who thought we don't need anybody to tell us this because I have a stam v'chakach makloket, what do I need anybody to tell me about whether the halacha is like Rav Yehuda? So then Rav Yehuda says, no, we need it. Sakadach v'minein said of the Mishnah. I would have thought that maybe there is no order to the Mishnah. And this is really not a makloket v'chakach stam, but it's really a stam v'chakach makloket. How do you know what the right order is? So Tosu's comments over here, obviously, when we say in a state of the Mishnah, that is, when we look at any Mishnayot, not in the context of the way Rebbe put them together, but rather when somebody learned them in the Beis Medrash. We don't know which is the order of which. Maybe they learned Bava Metzia before they learned Bava Kama. How do we know what the order is? Now, Rebbe, when he placed them in an order that he wanted in some sort of Seder, because the Gemara asks in many places, why does this Masechta follow this Masechta? So Rebbe obviously put them in an order and designated an order for them, but maybe when they were first learned, there was no order to them, or they were learned in a different order, and therefore you can't make any conclusions about if that's the case, then this whole principle of machloket, and then afterwards the stam, that the halacha is like the stam mishnah, basically falls away, because you can never make any claims as to order. I mean, that all falls apart. The stam, v'chakach machloket, maybe it's always a stam, and then a machloket afterwards, meaning that you can't come to any conclusion with regards to the order of the mishnah. If you can't come to any conclusion, then why do we have this principle at all? Rav Huna says, no, kilar minin inside of the mishnah, b'chad ha-mesichta, no. When do we say there is no seder to the Mishnah? That's in one Masechta, which a Masechta with Amrinan. But when it comes to two Masechta, then we can say it. So we don't say, when we say it, we look internally in a single Masechta, then we say there's clearly order to the Mishnayot. Everything that's learned in that, we have to look at it and we can say, maybe there's Stam, Machloket, Machloket, Achastam. They have relevance within the context of a single Masechet. But when we expand beyond a single Masechet, then we can't make that determination. We can't say that one Masechta was learned before another Masechta. We have no idea in which the order of which the Masechta were learned. Rav Yosef, Kulon Ezekin, Chad Masechti. When it comes to Ezekin, they're all one Masechta, meaning that Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Batra are all considered to be one big Masechta. It's broken down into three components, but it's a single Masechta, and therefore order matters. Between Baba Kama and Baba Metzia, order does matter. And therefore here we have a Machloket and Baba Kama, and a Stam and Baba Metzia. That will be considered into the order, and that will be Machloket, Vachaka Stam, and Allah Chazke, Stam Mishnah. And then some people say no. Mishum diktani la gabi hilchata psikta. Because it's written by halachot psukot. Kol mashaneh yado atachtona. V'chol echozer bo yado atachtona. So what does it mean that it's written by halachot psikta? Rashi says that this stam is vaday ikarhu. This stam is definitely the one that's kovei alaracha, according to Rabbi Yosef. Why is that? It's written in the middle of a section about Metzia, which it has no relevance to. So it's written out of context. If it's out of context, it's clear that the Mishnah is just enumerating things that are alachot psukot. And below Tanya, the Mishum Pisuk Halacha. The only reason it's written there is to give you Psak Halacha along with other items that there are clear Peske Halacha. Tosu says, wait a minute, how is that true? Because we know that these items in the Mishnah of Metzia are one of them the Gemara sets up as being a Yechidahi. So if it's a Yechidahi, how could it be that we are paskening or making considering that Halacha Psukah? So one answer Tosu says it goes like the Ibait Ema there in the Gemara of Metzia, who does not send it up as a Halacha Kita. But then he gives a second interpretation, which is seems like a more plausible explanation or alternative, which is that the language that's used in the Mishnah of Metzia is language of a Halacha Psukah, meaning that this is more of a definitive statement, an all-encompassing statement. When someone says Kol Echozer, Kol HaMishaneh, that's what it means. It's Lashon of a Halacha Psukah, not necessarily about referencing what the tokef of the actual Mishnah itself is, but the usage of the words that are there indicate something of a halacha psukah. So now the Gemara moves on to an additional case over here. This is Tanra Banan. Gemara says, "Hanotein ma'ot lishulchol." Person who gives money to an agent to act on his behalf, lekachlo chitim to buy wheat on his behalf, lekachbohem seorim, changes his agency, abrogates his agency, ends up buying barley instead. Seorim lekachbohem chitin. On the other hand, he assigned the valabai, the principal, asked the agent to buy barley on his behalf, and instead he ends up buying wheat. So now, Tanya Chado, we have one price that indicates in Pachtu, Pachtu Lo, that if they go down in value, if they diminish in value, they diminished in the hands of the Shliach. It becomes the problem of the agent. But if they go up in value, it's also to the benefit or to the. It goes to the pocket of the agent over here. But Tanya Chado, we have an alternative price that says in Pachtu, Pachtu Lo, that if it goes down in value, then that's the problem of the agent, and the agent will be on the hook for the diminishment in value. But on the other hand, in Miltiro, Tiro the Emsa, if they go up in value, then they actually split it. The principal and the agent split that value. So what's the case over here? As Rashi explains over here, this is the case of an investor. An investor who gives money over to an agent to act on his behalf, that they'll split the profits. So here, the giver of the money will get some of the profits because he's providing the capital. On the other hand, the investor himself, the agent, will also gain a portion of the profits because he's actually going out and doing the investing. So now we have two brightot over here. It's one bright that explains that when the person gives the money, instructs the agent to do something, and the agent changes what the instructions were, that it becomes all the problem of the agent now. Then if the commodity or whatever he was supposed to buy goes up in value or goes down in value when he changed what he was instructed to do, then he gets that benefit or he gets that detriment. On the other hand, we have a second brisa which indicates that when it goes down in value, it's the problem of the agent. On the other hand, when it goes up in value, the agent in principle will split the profits like they originally had planned to do. So how do we explain this theory between these two brisos? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, who says, I have no problem. Look, Asha, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. There are two different authors of these brisos. One author of the brisa is Rabbi Meir. The other author is Rabbi Yehuda. Why? How Rabbi Meir, Damar Shinoi Konet. Rabbi Meir of our Mishnah, who says that when you do Shinoi, when you make a change in the item that you are taking, you are like a mazik over here, and you become, or you acquire that item through the Shinoi. So over here in our Mishnah, in a case where he was instructed, the craftsman was instructed to color or dye something a certain color, and then he changes that, he becomes a mazik, especially according to Rashi, who says he did it lishtot bekavana, he did it intentionally, he came to change it over here. He's a mazik, he's being mishaneh the item. What's mishaneh the item? He's koneh, and that means that he has to return to the original owner the item at that moment, whatever it was worth. Now, after that point, anything that happens to the item is to the benefit or accrues. Whether it's beneficial or not beneficial, it all accrues to the benefit of the agent. So he'll be the author of that first brisa that says that it all is the agent's. Now, whether it goes up in value, down in value, that's all the agent's issue. V'ha Rabbi Yehuda, the second brisa is Rabbi Yehuda, the Ma'ar, Shinoi Eino Koneh. It says that Shinoi is not Koneh. When you change something, you don't necessarily make a kinyan on that item. Now again, as I pointed out earlier in the daf, that this Rashi over here explains that Rabbi Yehuda says that Shinoi Eino Koneh, as opposed to what Rashi says on the Mishnah. Rashi on the Mishnah says the position of Rabbi Yehuda is not about Shinoi and Koneh. He actually believes, like Rabbi Meir, that Shinoi is Koneh. If Shinoi is Koneh, that means that the agent should get the benefit and the detriment. But Rashi says on the Mishnah, the reason Rabbi Yehuda does not believe that, he believes that when it goes down in value, you're right. Shinoi Koneh is the problem of the agent. On the other hand, when it goes up in value, it accrues to the benefit of the Balim and not to the agent because, or to the craftsman that he gave it to because of a Knas. it was Agave Kanasa, that people who change or steal in this manner, who are mazik in this manner, should not benefit from it. It was a disincentive for them to steal. And so he was konis them that they actually had to pay the money, even though truly it belonged to them. Whereas Rashi over here and the Gemara seems to indicate that Rabbi Yehuda's position is not that Shinui is kone, but rather a totally different opposite position of Rabbi Meir, that Shinui is eno kone. He's not kone with the Shinui. Now, if Shinui is not kone, that means that the original principal, the Balim, the person who gave over the money over here, actually owns the item. If he owns the item, it should be his, whether it goes up in value or down in value. But that's not what the second price says. The second price says if it goes up in value, then it's like its original terms, and he'll split it with the agent. On the other hand, when it goes down in value, it becomes the agent's problem, and the Balim don't own it at all. So how do you explain that? Well, we explain it like this, because what did he do? He made this person into an agent, a shliach for him. So now, if he does a shlichut, and it goes up in value, meaning that he does, there's some benefit here, and then we say shinei no kone, and it stays where it is. It stays the original agreement. The original agreement is that we split profits. On the other hand, when it goes down in value, agency, or the principal can say to the agent that it's only an agency when you do it to my benefit. If it accrues to my detriment, I didn't make you an agent to do something wrong for me or do something bad for me. And here, when you changed, you actually did something that was to my detriment, and therefore, I'm not on the hook for that. So in the case where it goes down in value, we say the agent is on his own because he's actually no longer an agent. He abrogated his agency and therefore he's not an agent. On the other hand, if it goes up in value, then we say, well, Shino Eino Kone, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if Shino Eino Kone, then it still belongs to the Balabite. It still belongs to the Balabite. Then we're back to our original terms, which is that we split the money. Now, Rabbi Lazar says, Wait a minute. How do you know that that's really the position of Rabbi Meir? You know about Rabbi Meir from our Mishnah, but there might be a different, Rabbi Meir might actually have a difference in opinion depending on what the case is. So, Matzkis or Rabbi Lazar, Mimai. How do you know this is true? Dilmad kan lo kamar Rabbi Meir elamide de chazile. That's only when it's something that is useful to him, the gufe, meaning as a consumer of the item. He's actually buying the item to use it or consume it. Avlus Chorav, he's an investor, lo amar. Maybe Rabbi Meir does not hold of his position, meaning that there will be a difference between the fact that the person is a consumer, as Rashi gives examples of Tzemer Lubosh, she's taking he's using wool to wear, or Safsal the Hishtameshbo, or a bench that he's going to use for either sitting on or laying on. In both these items, the consumer is actually buying the item to use it. And therefore, if the agent violates the instructions of the principal, then his agency is invalidated. Why is it invalidated? Or why is Shinui Kone over here? Because the Shinui actually changes what the person wanted, that the principal wanted. He wanted to end up with wool. He wanted to, or a certain color wool. He wanted to end up with a bench. And whatever this agent went ahead and did changed that, and he doesn't end up with what he wants. Then that's not true by an investor. An investor is after a different tachlit or a different end game. An investor is not necessarily particular about what he invests in, but his particular need is that he makes profits. And that's all he cares about, is making profits. So you could say, according to Rabbi Meir, possibly, that when Rabbi Meir says Shinui Kone, that's talking about consumer items, where you are asking your agent to do something on your behalf to acquire items, and when he doesn't do that, then it's a Shinui, and that Shinui is Kone, and the agent becomes the principal then of that item, and you, the Balim, are out of the picture. And they have to pay back. This person who's Mazik or Zagazlan will have to pay back the Balim as if the moment that he gave him the item and he made that Shinui. Other than on an investor, we can make two cases. If he asks you to invest in a certain commodity, and then you go ahead and change the commodity that you're investing in. So there are two possible outcomes when you change it. One outcome is that you invest in this other commodity that he didn't ask you for, and it goes down in value. The other possibility is that you invest in the commodity, and this other commodity that I didn't ask you to, and it goes up in value. So maybe Rabbi Meir would say in that instance, if it goes down in value, right, then you changed your agency. You didn't do what I wanted, which is to make profits. Therefore, you're no longer my agent. If you're no longer my agent, that's why the agent's on the hook for the differential. But maybe when it goes up in value, you still are an agent. Why? Because there's no shinui over here. There's really no change. What did I ask you to do? I asked you to go and make profits for me. In the end, you didn't listen to me and get the right commodity, but in the end, you did make profits. So there is no shinui, and that's why I still own it. So maybe Rabbi Meir could be the author of the second brisa and not the first brisa. So Rabbi Lazar, using his question, actually creates how to explain these two brisa. Now it's El Amar Rabbi Lazar, Habaha Rabbi Meir. Both of these brisa with the Rabbi Meir, but Lokasha Kana Chilak on the Schora, depends what the Balim are actually asking, the principals are asking the agent to do. If the principal are asking the agent to go and buy them something to eat or buy them something that they're going to consume as a consumer, then if he changes it, that's a real shinoid, that's a change. And when you have a change, that
goes no longer belongs to the original Balim, because change makes you the Konad. The agent now becomes the owner of the item, and anything goes up in value, down in value, that's all going to belong to the agent. And the agent owns the money to the principal or the Balim that originally gave it to him. They owe the money as of the moment they did the change, meaning from the original state of that item. On the other hand, the second Bryce is talking about a case of investment, according to Rabbi Meir. In a case of investment, again, we said there are two issues here. One is agency, and the other one is the outcome of what I want here. I want you to do something. I ask you to buy a specific commodity, and then the other thing I want you to do is to make profits over here. So in the case where you follow my agency and you do buy the commodity that I said, then you're really acting on my behalf. It goes up in value or down in value. We'll both be on the hook, meaning that I'll be on the hook for that diminishment or increase in value, and we'll share in that. On the other hand, if you violate my instructions and then you buy another commodity, now we're in a problem. So if it goes down in value, I can say, listen, you violated my instructions, you're not my agent, and now the agent's on the hook, and any value diminishment will be his problem. On the other hand, if the new commodity you bought goes up in value, the guy say, well, basically you did what I asked you to do, was make money. And you made money. If you made money, there's actually no shinoi here, because you didn't change my instructions in the sense that you bought a different commodity, but you bought a different commodity and then ended up making money. So when you ended up making the money, then I'm just as happy as that you bought my commodity, and there's no shinoi. If there's no shinoi over here, then we're back to the original contract. The original contract said that we split the profits, and that's what the second brisa says. So according to Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Meir is the author of both brisot. Just the context for the circumstances change. One is talking about a consumer, and one's talking about an investor. By consumer, changing is a shinoi. By an investor, not all changes are a change, because sometimes you end up with the same tachlit, the same outcome, which is a good profit, and that may not be a change, and therefore the balim will remain, the owners or the principals will actually have their agency be carried out, and they will share the profits with the person, the agent that went ahead and invested on their behalf. So now the Gemara has a question from Machuka Rabbi Yochanan, Levi Rabbi Yehuda. In Eretz Yisrael, they used to laugh at Rabbi Yochanan's explanation according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because what does Rabbi Yochanan say according to Rabbi Yehuda? That shinoi is eno koneh. That when you make a change, there is no kinyan. So if you make a change, there is no kinyan. That means that everything that's happening is really happening on behalf of the balim. It means that the balim, the original balim, or the person who gave him the money, is actually the owner of this item. And if it goes up in value or diminishes in value, that's all going to accrue to the benefit or detriment of the owner. That means that an agent is acting over here, and the balim still own it. So that's what the Bnei Merava say to him. Wait a minute. Michimil diol the balchitim shikne chitim the balmaot. When you have a transaction that transpires, you need a makne and you need a kone. You need someone who is giving over the kinyan, right, and someone who is actually acquiring the item. So here we know who the mocher is, we know who the seller is, we just don't know who the buyer is. Who's the buyer in this instance? If the buyer is the agent wasn't assigned any power to buy anymore because he changed his agency. If he changed his agency, he's not acting on behalf of the original owner. On the other hand, if you say the agent's buying for himself, we say Shiano Konet. So that's Rashi's explanation over here. The Bnei Merava say nobody acquired it over here. The agent didn't acquire it because Shinoi Eino Koneh. If Shinoi Eino Koneh, then he had no rights, or he was not acting on his own behalf. If he's not acting on his own behalf, he never acquired it. On the other hand, how could he be acting on behalf of the original owners, the people who gave him the money, or people, the principal who signed him to be the agent? How can he act on their behalf? He changed their instructions, so he's no longer their agent. And did he ever tell the Mocher that he's buying on behalf of these people? No, because he didn't follow their instructions. So how does the Mocher know that he's selling it to the original owners or the Balim of the Ma'ot? They're not. They don't know that. So Rashi says it fails in both halves, and yes, you know what? The property goes back to the Mocher. The Mocher is on the hook for the losses and the gains here, because Mocher never actually sold it. He was Makdeh, but there was no Koneh. There was no Koneh in the agent, and there was no Koneh in the principal. If that's the case, there's no owner over here. If there's no owner here, it reverts back to the Mocher. So how could you suggest in the position of Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yehuda says, Shinoi no Koneh, and therefore, if it goes up in profit, the Balim share, and if it goes down in profit, the principal owns it. Neither of them own anything here, because there was never any Kinyan. So that's what Rashi explains. The Tosfos also brings a similar explanation to Rashi, but he does offer, before he starts, that he offers an alternative shot here, that you can't act on behalf of the Balim here, because the agent abrogated his agency, and therefore the agent is acquiring it for himself. And then Tosfos says, well, if that's the case, then you could even ask this question in Rabbi Elazar. Tosfos comes up with an explanation to say why it's not such a big deal for Rabbi Elazar, but a bigger deal for Rabbi Yochanan. But he does suggest there's a possibility that the agent acquires it here when he acts out of his scope of his agency, that he becomes the owner. On the other hand, Rashi, in the second day on Tosfot, which seemed to be the more mainstream explanation of this Gemara, is that when an agent acts out of scope, meaning that he does something that he was not assigned to do, then he does not acquire it because he's not trying to act on his own behalf, and the original owner doesn't own it because, or not the original owner, but the person who's trying to buy through him or the principal that's using him as the agent doesn't own it because the agent didn't do what he instructed him to do. Plus, he didn't tell the mocher, he never instructed the mocher to know that he has to, he's selling it to the original, or the investor here, or the person with the money, because he abrogated the agency, so he can't be working on his behalf. So there, nobody owns it. So the Gemara continues, Matkif lo Rav Shmuel bar Sestrei. So Rav Shmuel bar Sestrei asks, Ilachi, well, according to you, B'nai Marava, afilu chitim v'chitim. Even if the agent carries out the agency that he was assigned to do, meaning that he went and bought. The owner said, go buy me chitim, and he went ahead and bought chitim, nami. Right? So why don't you say the same thing? Namilo, why don't we say that it doesn't work over here? Why? Because you never told when the agent went out and bought the chitim, he never said, I'm buying it for Reuven. Reuven says to Shimon, go buy me chitim. Shimon goes into the shuk, buys chitim. He doesn't tell every guy he's buying from, I'm buying these for Reuven. Never tells anybody that. He just goes and buys them. And yet it works that a Reuven is able to acquire these items. So if you, B'nai Rava, believe that when the agent goes out there and doesn't say who he's buying it for, the agency, that the principal doesn't get it. So when Reuven tells Shimon, go buy me wheat, and then Shimon goes out and buys him barley instead, Shimon doesn't tell the guys that he's buying the barley for Reuven. So Reuven doesn't own it over here. Wait, if Reuven doesn't own it because Shimon didn't tell me he's buying it on their behalf, so too with Chitim, when he goes and buys it on behalf of Reuven, Reuven shouldn't own the Chitim. All right, Bo, what do you mean? Shiny chitim v'chitim shlitei kavod. V'chi balabayit omi. When it comes to him following the instructions, when he says to him, Reuven says to Shimon, go buy me wheat, and he goes ahead and buys wheat, then Shimon really steps into the shoes of the balabayit. Because he did the agency that he was assigned to do, then an agent, right, is shliach shadam shkirmoto. That a shliach of a person is like himself. So meaning that the agent now becomes like the principal, so when he goes and buys in the shuk, it's as if Reuven himself is walking around the shuk and buying those items. That's why he doesn't have to inform them that he's been buying on behalf of Reuven. On the other hand, if the agent goes in and is buying against the wishes of the principal, meaning that Reuven told him to buy wheat, and now Shimon's in there buying barley, if he doesn't tell the mochrin that he's buying on behalf of Reuven, he has no rights. He's out of the scope of his agency. He's not acting as a shliach of Reuven. He's acting on his own behalf or his own volition. And that doesn't assign any ownership to Reuven unless he tells the mochrin, I'm buying this for Reuven. Then you can maybe have some meeting of the minds that Reuven actually got something or was koneh something. But otherwise, there's no way the mochrin knows that he's actually selling it to Reuven himself, because Shimon has no rights to buy this on behalf of Reuven. Teda, how can I prove to you that a shliach, when a shliach does a shlichut, that he actually steps into the shoes and acts on behalf of the other, he becomes the agent, becomes like the principal himself. Echad ha-makdish, because we have a Mishnah. Echad ha-makdish nechasav, echad ha-machrich etetzmo. Person is makdish, someone consecrates, basically gives to Hekdesh all of his possessions, or a person who says that I am going to give to Hekdesh my value according to the value tables that the Torah lays out at the end of Vayikra. So it says, Ein lo b'ksut ishto, v'lo b'ksut banav, v'lo b'tzeva shetzeva lishman, v'lo b'salim chadashim shlakon lishman. So when it comes to this, when the gizbar, when the treasurer of the Hekdesh comes to collect the items from the site, he says, look, I was makdish all my property. So now the gizbar comes to collect everything that Hekdesh owns. Things that are excluded from his Hekdesh are his clothing of his wife, the clothing of his children, and any dye or coloring that he did on behalf of his wife in her clothing, or any new shoes that he bought on her behalf, even though he hasn't given them to her yet, even though she already has a pair of shoes, but nevertheless, if he bought them for her specifically, then they become hers, and therefore the gizbar does not have a right to go and collect this item. Vamai. Why not? Why is the gizgar precluded from taking these? They all belong to him, it seems. So why is he precluded from taking this? Lema hachanami. Miho dio litzeva shiknet tzeval isha. Why don't we say the same thing that the B'nai Marava said before? Who told the tzeva, who told the dyer, that the woman is actually acquiring the dye? The husband comes along and says, listen, you know, can you dye this shirt for my wife? Can you purchase this dye and do something on behalf of my wife? Can you do this for me? He doesn't say, on behalf of my wife. He just says, do it. And yet, what the husband's doing, intending to give it to his wife, or for his wife, we say it's as if the craftsman gave it directly to the woman. And it's outside of the property of the Baal. Because when he's Magdish Nechasav, this is not included. How does this work? That he's actually doing the agency or the bidding of his wife. And he becomes and steps in places of his wife. since he steps in the place of his wife when he goes and tells the craftsman to do something, as if the wife herself was actually telling the craftsman to do that. Therefore, it's Sukhot Kadam Kemoto, Achanamish Chitay Kavid, Uchiyad Balabaitam. So, too, in our case, by Chitin and Chitin, the agent becomes like the Balabait, and he doesn't have to tell the Mochrin that he's buying on behalf of the Balabait because he is the Balabait. So, too, over here, the husband doesn't have to tell the Tzabah, doesn't have to tell the craftsman that he's doing it for his wife, because since he's acting as the agent of his wife, it's as if the wife herself is the one going in and buying it. So I have a proof to you that when you carry out your agency, you do things right, you become like the principal. And that's why we say you don't have to inform the sellers. But when you act out of scope and you're doing something that you weren't asked to do, then if you don't tell the mochrim, there's no meeting of the minds. There's no makneh and koneh over here, because we don't know the koneh himself. The makneh doesn't know he's actually selling it to the koneh. Now, the case here is a little strange, because the reason a husband actually has to get clothing for his wife is because he's chayiv in ksut, right? He's chayiv to provide clothing and shoes and all those sorts of things to his wife. That's one of the obligations of marriage. So how can you say over here that it really belongs to the wife? It belongs to the husband needs to discharge his obligation. That's why he's going to the craftsman. So you have to say, you have to give explanations either that the woman already has clothing, she doesn't need this, or this is in addition to what she has. She has sufficient ksut, and this is either to replace it or to make it better. So maybe in those cases, it's really he's acting on behalf of the woman. This is a benefit of the woman. He's not obligated to do this, but because he wants to give his wife a nice gift, he's really acting on her behalf to buy or to acquire or to do something on her behalf. So I'm a Rabbi Abba. Rabbi says, no. Lo, that doesn't have to be the explanation of this Mishnah. Lo, no, when a person is makdish all of his personal belongings, he excludes from that, or he doesn't include in that the possessions of his wife and his children. I mean, that when he says, kol my nechassim include things that I personally own and I personally use. Things that belong to my wife and my children, that's not included in my makdish. When a person is makdish all of his possessions, do you think he really meant to give away his tefillin? He needs his tefillin to do a mitzvah. Yet, v'tanan, we have a Mishnah by Hekdesh, makdin hechazav madin lo tefillin. A person is makdish all of his possessions, has to go buy back. He has to go buy out his tefillin. So you see that he's makdish his tefillin. So even though a person doesn't have in mind to be makdish his tefillin, nevertheless, they are kodesh. Too bad, they are kodesh, and he has got redeemed. Same too. Even the person doesn't have in mind to be makdish his wife's clothing or his child's clothing, but when he says it, and he says, I'm makdish all my property, then it goes. That's it. Everything's makdish, and he's going to have to buy them back. So that's not going to be there. Can't be the explanation. So Amar Leibai, Abai comes to the defense of Rabbi Abba and says, no, in. Datosho adam al tefillin. No, a person does have in mind tefillin when he's makdish kol nechasav. Why? Makdish nechasav savar mitzvah kavidna. The person when he's makdish all of his possessions thinks he's doing a mitzvah. So he's doing a mitzvah, he's going to give everything, including his tefillin. He's going to give everything over to Hekdesh. Hekdesh needs his tefillin back? No, but he was in a mood that he's doing a mitzvah and he just gives everything. Ah, but then if that's the case, why are the clothing of his wife and children excluded over here? She says the same thing. He's doing a mitzvah. That's Mishum Eva. He doesn't want to be confronted with the ire of his wife and children for giving away their clothing. So when I say he goes to do a mitzvah, he does a mitzvah whatever his possessions are. He's willing to do a mitzvah and take care of whatever he owns, no matter what it is, he's going to give it away. On the other hand, when it comes to his wife and children, then he's not willing to face their ire in order to do the mitzvah. So there we say that they're excluded from the hekdesh that he does. So just to review here quickly, right, we have a position of the Bnei Marava. The Bnei Marava say that unless the person who's selling knows who's acquiring, then nothing works. So we challenge that and say, wait a minute, then how does any agent go out and act on behalf of the principal? The Gemara differentiates. When an agent is acting within his scope, then he becomes he's like as if he's in the shoes of the Balabait. He becomes like the Balabait himself. And therefore, when he buys, it's as if the Balabait went and bought it directly from the Mocher. On the other hand, when he goes out of scope and he violates or abrogates his agency, in that instance, we have to say, listen, you're not acting on behalf of the Balim because you're not an agent. So unless he informs the Mocher, the seller, that he's buying on behalf of this other person, then this other person is not really buying because the Mocher doesn't know who he's selling to. He's not selling it to anybody because the agent doesn't empower to koneh on behalf of the principal, and the principal's not there that the Mocher, or the Mocher's not even aware of the principal that he's selling it to him. So then the Gemara says, I can prove to you that that's the case because I have this case by Hekdesh. By the case of Hekdesh, we say that the wife and children's clothing are excluded from the Hekdesh that he does. So if that's the case, why is it that they're excluded from all these items? We say because the Balim are acting on behalf of his wife. When he goes to acquire clothing, or he goes to get something dyed, or he acquires dyed, or he acts a craftsman to dye something on behalf of his wife, when he's acting there, he's acting as the agent of his wife. That's something that his wife wants. If his wife wants it, then he's the agent of his wife. So I proved to you that when there is proper agency, it's as if the person steps into the shoes. The Baal becomes like the Isha, and he's acquiring on behalf, and that's why Hekdesh can't get a hold of those items, because they really belong to the Isha. So the Gemara says, no, Rabbi Abba. You know, it says that's not the explanation of the price. The explanation of the price is when somebody's makdish something, he doesn't include his wife's clothing. He excludes them. That's not what he thinks about. When he says, I'm makdish all my personal belongings, he means his personal belongings. He doesn't mean his wife's stuff or his kid's stuff. As excluding them. We had a challenge from Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says, wait a minute. If that's the case, then when a person doesn't have in mind to be makdish something, then he doesn't include that. Why are tefillin included? So the Baal comes to defense of Rabbi Abba and says, no, there's a difference between tefillin and clothing. By tefillin, person thinks he's doing a mitzvah, so he'll give up all his personal belongings, even his tefillin, because he thinks he's doing a mitzvah. One mitzvah, another mitzvah, so he'll give them all up, give them all to Hekdesh. And then when it comes to his wife and children, that he's not willing to do the mitzvah and face the ire of his children or his wife, because that's definitely, he does not have that. That's not his intention to do something detrimental to them in order to perform the mitzvah of Hekdesh. Now we're going to have a challenge to this position from Rabbi Oshia. Rabbi Oshia. Wait a minute. The Mishnah has two different cases there. You have a case of Makdish when he's making something Hekdesh, but there's also a case of Erech. Erechin. So you explain to me nicely how we explain the case of Makdish. But the case of Erech, when he says Erech Alai, right, what do you say there? Oh, he doesn't have dat on his wife's clothing and his children's clothing. Well, I'll show you that's not the case. Why? It's not. Chayavi Erechin Mamashkinin Otan. That when it comes to someone who says that I am giving my Erech, my worth, based on the tables that are given in the Torah to Hekdesh, then Hekdesh is, or the Gizbar is allowed to go and take security from him, take security, sell it off to get his payment. So when it says, when a person already took the nether of Erech, he intended to pay that with cash. He doesn't intend to have collateral or security taken away from him. That's not his original intent. Despite the fact that it's not his original intent, the Gizbar can come along and take it against his will. It doesn't have a choice about that. If that's the case here too, the Gizbar should be able to take the clothing of his wife and children. I don't care what he thinks. He doesn't want to give it. That doesn't matter. It's his possessions. These are his belongings. You want his belongings, he gets to take everything, including his wife's stuff and his children's stuff. El Amr Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba offers a different explanation. When a person is makdish all of his personal belongings, as if a priori before the fact he actually went ahead and signed or gave over, put into their name all their clothing, whether it's his children or his wife's clothing, as if he signed, because oh, that stuff belongs to you, I'm putting that in your name. Now when I'm makdish kol nechasav, when I'm putting all my belongings, that means my belongings and that stuff that's in your name. So since this stuff's already in your name, right, then I can't be included in the hekdesh here. So that's what we said. As opposed to before, the explanations focused on what his dat is, what his intent is. When he's makdish, does he leave certain things out? Does he include certain things out here? Here the Gemara says the question, according to Rabbi Abba, and that question never comes up. It's not about what he leaves out, what he doesn't leave out. But when he originally is makdish, he gives the other stuff that's given to his wife and children are put in their own name, and that his hekdesh can't reach there because it's not his personal belongings anymore. They're in their names. It has nothing to do with him. So when he's makdish it, the hekdesh never reaches those possessions. As opposed to the original explanations would say, well, the hekdesh could reach those possessions, just there are other factors that come in here. First of all, he doesn't want to face the ire of his wife or children. He doesn't have his das on it. So that excludes them. But now we're saying, no, that his hekdesh never comes or encompasses those items. So Tana Rabbanan, now we have a brayta. This brayta says, a person buys a property on behalf of his friend, or in the name, it's not really on behalf of his friend, but in the name of his friend. We don't force that friend to sell it. But if he doesn't as a condition, then we do force him to sell it. So obviously this is a cryptic brayta, and that's what the Gemara asks, Mike Hamar, what does this brayta mean? So Amar Rav Sheshit, Rav Sheshit gives the first suggestion. Achikamah, that's what it means. Okay, sademi chaveiro b'shem reish galuta. A person here goes and buys, acquires a property. He's really acquiring the property for himself. But when he puts in the contract, he writes in the contract that it's really the reish galuta who's buying the property. Why would he do such a thing? The Rashi explains that there were people. He's afraid of these tzrikim, these people that are going to come along and force the property away from him. They're going to cause him problems about the ownership of the property. So what does he do? He says, listen, I'm going to buy the property for myself, but I'll just write in the contract that it really belongs to the reish galuta. So if these people come along and they're going to make claims against the property, or they're going to try to steal the property, we'll show them the shtar and says it belongs to the Reish Galuta. So if that's the case, in Kofinoto, we don't force the Reish Galuta, Limkor, we don't force the Reish Galuta to go then and write another contract or to sell it back to the real owner, because he didn't, what does the Reish Galuta have to do with this? He went ahead and he created this situation, so we're not going to force the Reish Galuta to go and do anything. He owns the property, he can live and use the property on now. All right, now he has a problem. There's a contract that says it really belongs to the Reish Galuta, but that was a problem that he created for himself. V'mamaro manat. But on the other hand, if he premises the whole sale that the Reish Galuta will sell it back to him, then Kofintin get the Reish Galuta limkor. Then we force the Reish Galuta to carry it out. Because if the Reish Galuta doesn't actually sell it back to him or write a contract that says it really belongs to this owner, then the whole sale will fall apart. The whole sale will fall apart because he made it a condition of the sale. The condition of the sale is that the Reish Galuta will actually sell it back to this lokeach, as opposed to the first case where the lokeach just acted and said, you know, this is what I want. I want you to write a contract like this. I'm buying this, and it looks like he's buying as an agent on behalf of the Reish Galuta. So I'm Amar, if that's the case, lokeach sadeh b'shem Reish Galuta in kofinoto. From this we can say the miknekanile. And from this we say that the agent, right, this guy who comes along and he's buying a field, Reuven wants to buy a field from Shimon. So Shimon has a field. Reuven comes along and says, "Listen, I'm here. I'm buying on behalf of the Reish Galuta. I'm buying on behalf of the Exilak." The truth is that Reuven has no agency, has no permission to be buying on behalf of the Reish Galuta. Yet he goes ahead and he creates a transaction with Shimon. And when he buys the property of Shimon, Reuven actually owns it, because he's the one who's actually being buying it here. He's putting up the money. He really intends to buy it. We just have a contract that says it belongs to the Reish Galuta. So even though the Mocher does not know who he's selling it to, he thinks he's selling it to Reish Galuta, and he's really selling it to Reuven, who's buying it for himself, yet nevertheless the transaction goes through. Who does that present the problem from? The Bnei Bar Rava. Bnei Bar Rava says if the Makneh doesn't know who he's selling it to, the Kinyan doesn't go through. Right? When the case of the above, where the Chitim and Sorim, where the person who invested the money says, go buy me Chitim, and instead he buys him Sorim, we said that there's no transaction here, because the Mocher, the seller over here, has no idea that he's selling it to this principal, to this Balabayu, who gave the money to go buy. He has no idea that he's selling it to him. All he sees is the agent in front of him, and the agent says, I'm buying it, and he doesn't tell him who is he buying it for. So it looks like he thinks the agent's buying it. On the other hand, it's really the Balim are buying it. So too over here. It's the exact same case. The Mocher thinks he's selling it to the Reish Galuta, but he's really selling it to this guy here. Yet in the case of Bnei Rava, they say the Kinyan doesn't work. But over here, it says the Kinyan does work. He owns it. He just doesn't have a star to back it up. My says, what do you mean? If that's the problem, that's not a question. Why? Because we can differentiate. Going to Odir, Labalsa, Devodin, Lasade. Over here, this guy who's buying on behalf of the Exilak doesn't mean he comes along and he says to listen to Reuven, comes along to Shimon and says, I want to buy the property. So no problem. There's some strong men around here who are going to try to take it away from me. So I want you to do me a favor. When I buy the property, so you know I'm buying it, so that's why the transaction goes through. There's a Makneh and a Kuneh. On the other hand, I want you to write a contract to the that it says it's going to the Exilak, going to the Reish Galuta, so that people don't question my ownership over here or try to take the property away from me, because it belongs to the Reish Galuta. So since the Edim and the seller are in on the secret over here, then the Makneh, the Mocher, knows who he's selling it to. He knows he's selling it to Reuven. He doesn't think he's selling it to the Reish Galuta just because they write these documentation, but they're aware that all this documentation is just to protect him. What are you going to do about the second half of this brisa? Amanat kofinoto. That if he says, on condition that the Exilark, the Reish Galuta, will sell me the property, write me a contract afterwards to say the property really belongs to me, then we Reish Galuta limkor. We force the kofinoto Reish Galuta limkor. We force the Reish Galuta to go and sell on property. Amai, why? V'lema Reish Galuta. The Reish Galuta can say, lo yakur chayu beina, v'lo zilitaychu beina. I don't know what you guys are doing over here, but I don't want your kavod, and I don't want the bad stuff that you're giving me. I mean, I don't want your kavod that you think I'm the strong man here, and nobody's going to come take the property. It's under my name that you give me such kavod. And I don't want your stuff that is denigrating, in a sense, or making me go become a real estate broker over here, that I'm going to start selling you property, and I have to write contracts for you. I don't want to be involved in this case. Who brought me into this case? I had nothing to do with this case. How do you bring me into this case? I don't want anything to do this. How can we force the Reish Galuta to do anything? Ella Amar Abaye, Abaye says, no, this is the explanation of that brayta. What is it? Tach Gemar, Okeach Sadeh B'Shem Chaveiro. So the girsa that we have has Reish Galuta over here, which is the girsa of Rashi, which says, Okeach Sadeh B'Shem Chaveiro, Reish Galuta. Then the Rosh eliminates the girsa of Reish Galuta and says, Okeach Sadeh B'Shem Chaveiro. Now we'll continue with Rashi, explain Reish Galuta and explain it, but you should know that there's that alternative girsa. She says, En Kofir et Mocher, Limkor Zimna Achrite. We don't force the seller to write a second contract. That's what Rashi says. What happened here? The buyer comes along and says, listen, I'm buying the property from you, and I want you to write the contract to the Reish Galuta. So when you write the contract to the Reish Galuta, you really, in the end, he wants another contract that actually says that he owns the property. So we don't force the Mocher to go back and write a second contract. He says, you told me when you bought it that you wanted me to write to Reish Galuta. That's what I did. Don't come back to me and bother me now. If you wanted that to get done, do it up front. You should have told me to write two contracts up front. One contract to the Reish Galuta, one contract to you. The contract to the Reish Galuta so you can show other people so they won't come and steal the property. And the other contract will prove your ownership over the property. So since you didn't ask for that up front, then later on, don't come and bother me for this item. On the other hand, if he says the condition of the sale, right, this is the condition of the sale, is that you'll actually write me another contract, or we'll force him to write another contract, that the only way this will work is if I have two contracts here. Then later on, if he comes along and he says, where's my second contract, he can force the mocher, we force the mocher to write it, because that was a condition of the sale. So it was an inherent part of the sale. And therefore, if he ruins this, then it will be no sale. So we say, listen, mocher, you got to give over the... You got to give a second contract here to fulfill the conditions of the sale. Just point out, Tosos here on the top of Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph says, listen, wait, if the Edim and the Mocher are in on this whole secret over here, I mean, the case of Rav Sheshet explains that the difference between our case and B'nai Marav, and he's explaining the whole situation about being with the Reish Galuta and the question of whether the agent is Koneh over here on behalf of the Reish Galuta, we force the Reish Galuta to do anything. So in this case, Rav Sheshet said that he told the Edim and the Mocher what he was doing. He says, listen, I'm really buying it, but you're going to write in the contract, Reish Galuta. Wait, if the Edim know about that, why does he have to go to the Mocher? Let him go to the Edim and say, Edim, can you just write me a contract that says that I own this property? So if they could, why do we have to get involved with the Mocher at all? So to stand it up, the case must be here, in a case where the Edim are refusing to write this contract down, refusing to write this other contract. Since they're refusing to write the other contract, the only way for us to get the other contract is to go back to the Mocher. Well, that will depend on the question of what the obligation of the Mocher is over here, or of the Reish Galuta to write another contract. And that depends if how he formulated these, or stipulated that in the original sale. Okay, we'll stop over here.